Chapter 20, 1356 Hours. Porter stood in the doorway for several beats, staring at the empty space where Soames should have been, thinking, "Soames has given us the slip." Bald caught up with him. He glanced inside the storeroom, frowned. "What the fuck happened? Where's Soames?" Porter said nothing. He looked back at the door. Something wasn't right with this picture, but he couldn't place it.
"He must have booted his way out while we were on the rooftop," Bald added.
"No." Porter waved a hand at the lock. The metal had been twisted out of shape, and the surrounding wooden surface was blackened and shredded.
"Soames didn't kick it open. It's been blasted open from the outside. You can see the burn marks. Someone helped him escape."
Bald's frown deepened.
"Who would have done that?"
Porter shrugged. He looked hard at Bald for a moment. The guy had been ambivalent about the op from the beginning, and Porter wondered where his loyalties lay. Above everything else, Bald respected money, money and power, and Soames had plenty of both.
Enough to tempt Bald into sabotaging the op?
Porter didn't know. But they'd both been fighting for their lives on the rooftop for the past 7 hours. He found it hard to believe Bald would have had time to sneak away and bust Soames free without anyone noticing. Then he remembered Bald had gone downstairs to fill the tires. He'd been gone for several minutes. Long enough to make a detour and break Soames free? Perhaps. A question burned in Porter's mind.
Did Bald do a deal with Soames behind my back?
He parked the thought at the back of his mind as he heard the sound of approaching footsteps. Porter turned and saw one of the Nigerian soldiers walking over from the landing. The guy watched Porter with a tight, anxious expression. He had a thin, hollow-cheeked face with a pencil moustache faintly visible above his huge lips. The soldier scratched an elbow and tipped his head at the storeroom door.
"You are looking for the man in that room?"
Porter nodded.
"That's right. Did you see anything?"
"Maybe,"
the Nigerian said.
"Then again, maybe I did not."
He folded his arms across his chest and waited for Porter to dig his hand into his pocket and fish out a few dollar bills, presumably. Nigerians, thought Porter, always on the take, even in the middle of a bloody firefight. He stepped closer to the Nigerian and grabbed him by the jacket.
"I'm not fucking around. You'd better tell me what you saw."
The Nigerian saw the look of rage on Porter's face and relented.
"Three men," he said. "I saw three men."
The soldier held up three fingers as if to emphasize the point. Porter let go of the Nigerian and glared at him. The knife in his guts twisted a little more.
"Who? I didn't get a good look at them,"
the Nigerian protested.
"I saw them coming down the stairs, that's all. They smashed open the door and took the man inside with them. There was a lot of shouting, a lot of angry voices. The man didn't sound like he wanted to go with the others."
"But he left with them anyway."
"The men had guns. He couldn't refuse."
"Did you see where they took him?"
"Downstairs, to the car park. That's all I know."
He spread his hands, palms facing up, like a poker player revealing a crap hand.
"When was this?"
Bald demanded.
10 minutes ago, maybe,"
the soldier replied.
Bald
looked accusingly at the Nigerian.
"And you just stood there and fucking watched?"
The Nigerian folded his arms defensively across his chest.
"It's none of my business what these people do. I didn't want to get involved."
Bald's face twisted with anger. He snorted in contempt.
"Course you didn't, pal. Just like you and your fucking mates didn't want to get involved with fighting the rebels back there."
The soldier scratched his elbow again and said nothing. Porter said,
"The blokes who grabbed Soames, did you notice anything about them?"
"I told you, I didn't get a good look at their faces."
"What about their clothes? Anything about them? Were they black, white?"
"White men,"
the Nigerian said,
"in safari clothes. They look like those families that go on safari in the jungle, you know."
The knife moved again inside Porter's guts, gouging his vitals and twisting his stomach muscles. Shit, he thought.
"The Belgians! That's why they went missing from the rooftop. They're the ones who took Soames."
Bald said,
"Why the fuck would the Belgians have an interest in kidnapping Soames?" No idea, Jock, but there's only one way to find out.
The wounded Belgian, the guy with his guts hanging out. We need to find out what he knows.
Porter barged aside the Nigerian and raced back down the corridor towards the landing. Bald sprinted ahead of him. By now, several civilians had emerged from their rooms. They crowded the corridors on the upper floors, gossiping amongst themselves.
Get back in your rooms! Porter shouted at them.
What's going on out there?
A podgy French guy in a linen suit demanded.
Why can't we leave?
The evacuation hasn't started yet. Everything's under control. Someone will tell you when you're going to be processed. Until then, shut your mouth and stay in your fucking room.
The Frenchman reluctantly retreated to his room. The other guests swiftly followed. Porter and Bald pushed on up the stairs and accelerated up the bare concrete stairwell leading to the rooftop. Porter could feel his lungs burning, his veins simmering with rage. They hurried over to Tully. He was still kneeling beside the wounded Belgian, splashing water from a 1 liter bottle over the man's exposed bowels. He stood up and turned to face the Blades.
What's going on? He said.
Porter ignored the question. He dropped down beside the Belgian and grabbed the guy by the throat, clenching his fingers around the man's neck. The Belgian groaned, gasping for breath.
Where the fuck is Soames? Porter growled.
The Belgian coughed up blood and groaned again. Porter loosened his grip on the guy's neck so he could talk. The Belgian looked up. His eyes were inked with fear. But there was something else there, too, thought Porter. Defiance.
Fuck you,
the guy spat. His accent had subtly changed. It sounded harsher now, guttural and coarse. Definitely Eastern European. Porter tightened his grip around the man's neck again, compressing the cartilage and crushing his windpipe. Tears streamed down the man's cheeks.
It's only going to get worse if you don't talk,
Porter said as he released his grip again.
We know your mates have lifted Soames. Tell us where they took him. Fuck off,
the Belgian rasped, clenching his jaws in pain. Porter leaned in closer. He tapped his G-shock and lowered his voice to a sinister whisper.
That's a nasty wound you've got there. You've got about an hour and a half until you bleed out. There's a heli landing here in 20 minutes. Tell us what the fuck is going on, and we'll put you on the first chopper out of here and get you to a hospital. Or you can keep your mouth shut, and we'll dump you in the basement. It'll be hours before anyone finds you. You'll die in fucking agony. Your choice.
The Belgian hesitated. His eyes flicked from Porter to Bald to Tully, then back to Porter. The spark in his eyes faded, the defiance giving way to fear and uncertainty. Porter ripped off the basic dressing on his stomach wound. The man howled.
Fucking tell me, Porter said.
I swear, I don't know shit.
Bollocks, he's lying,
Bald cut in. Porter bunched his hands into fists.
I didn't survive a battle against hundreds of rebel fighters, only for this guy and his mates to screw the op.
He snatched up one of the jerry cans of petrol lying next to the burnt-out rubber tires. There was still some petrol left in the container, enough for his purposes. He moved back over to the Belgian and began pouring the liquid over his exposed entrails. The man screamed as Porter emptied the dregs over his head. Then he tossed the can aside and knelt down next to the Belgian.
Last chance. Talk, or I'll light your guts up.
The Belgian broke down in tears.
I don't know where they've gone,
he sobbed.
It's the fucking truth, I swear. The plan was to grab Soames and get out of here as soon as the rebels were defeated. We needed him alive to find out where he was hiding the stuff.
What stuff? Diamonds?
I don't know. They didn't tell us. We were just following orders.
Who sent you?
The man's eyes dimmed, like the light fading on a couple of headlamps. Porter grabbed the Belgian by his blood-stained bush shirt and shook him violently. He reeked of petrol fumes.
I said, who fucking sent you?
F.S.B.,
the man replied in a weak voice. Porter felt the blood draining from his head to his toes.
Shit.
FSB. Russian Federal Security Services.
You're Russian, he growled. The man nodded weakly. Where have your mates gone?
Porter said, shaking the Russian.
Fucking tell me!
The man winced.
I don't know.
Porter snatched up the kitchen knife lying next to the burnt-out tires. The knife tip gleamed wickedly. He pressed the tip against the Russian's exposed intestines, drawing an inhuman scream.
Tell me, or I'll cut your fucking insides out.
He pressed the knife harder. The tip pierced the man's vitals.
Shit!
The Russian gasped.
Fuck, no!
Talk!
The man whimpered and said,
Our bosses at the FSB, they sent us here to locate Soames. They said he was important to our president. We found out he checked in at this hotel, so we came here to look for him. Then the rebels attacked. We had to help you stop the enemy.
What about the others? Where have they gone?
The Russian coughed up blood.
They left with Soames as soon as the attack was over. The plan was to make him talk, find out where he's hiding everything. Then they were going to rob him.
He grimaced in pain, looked up at Porter with pleading eyes.
That's all I fucking know. You have to believe me.
The Russian closed his eyes, overwhelmed by the pain. Porter tossed aside the knife. He stood up and turned towards Bald and Tully. Overhead, the Blackhawks continued to circle in slow, lazy arcs.
Fucking great, Bald said. The Russians have lifted Soames, and we've got no idea where to look. Now, what are we supposed to do?
Then Tully said,
I think I know where they've gone.
Porter said,
Where?
Tully stared at the dying Russian as he replied,
The diamond mine.
Kono,
Bald frowned.
Why the fuck would Soames have taken the Russians there?
Soames knew the Russians were onto him, said Tully. He told me a couple of weeks ago over a few beers. He got drunk and told me the Russians were sniffing around, asking questions.
What sort of questions? Porter said.
About the stuff he's keeping safe at the mine.
Porter shot a glance at Bald, swung his gaze back to Tully.
What stuff, Bob?
Tully hesitated to reply. His eyes darted back and forth between the two operators, as if he was studying their reactions and debating whether to trust them. Then he took the plunge.
Soames has got something safe there, something everyone else has been after, including these Russians.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Porter said.
Stolen diamonds, said Tully.
That's what Soames has got stashed at the mine. A few diamonds he's nicked from under his employer's nose.
Not just a few, Tully shook his head. We're talking about a huge stash, fellas. Tens of millions of pounds worth of diamonds, Soames reckoned. Some of them are the size of fag packets. There's enough in the stash to buy a private island and fill it with high-class escorts.
Bald puffed out his cheeks and whistled.
Jesus, I'm in the wrong business.
Porter said,
Why would Soames hide diamonds in his own mining field?
Tully tapped the side of his head.
Think about it, mate. Safest place in the country. Round-the-clock security, and it's the last place anyone would think to look.
Bald stroked his jaw.
Makes sense. Hiding the loot in plain sight. No fucker would think to look there for a stash of stolen bling. It's the perfect hiding place.
Porter detected a note of admiration in Bald's voice. Not for the first time, he wondered whose side Bald was really on.
Why would the Russian security services give a toss about some stolen diamonds?
He asked. Tully shrugged.
Spoils of war? The Russians have got orders to seize the mine and use it to bankroll their operations in Sierra Leone. Nealis and his mates probably heard about the stash and decided to steal it for themselves.
But they didn't know about the stash. Not until they got their hands on Soames.
Tully rolled his eyes.
Fella, everyone knows the President Fofana is on the take. There have been rumours doing the rounds for some months that Soames has got Fofana in his pocket. The Russians would have heard about the rumours through their mates in the RUF. It wouldn't take a fucking genius to work out that Soames was using the diamonds to bribe the president.
Porter glowered at Tully.
Why didn't you tell us about this before?
I couldn't, mate. Soames gave me a job on the circuit when no other bastard was willing to take me on. I've got a good life out here, thanks to him. If he wants to cook up a few dodgy deals in the back office, it's none of my fucking business, is it?
Porter stayed quiet for a beat. He remembered what Tannen had told him in the hotel bar the previous evening, before the assault. The diamond mine makes Fort Knox look like a branch of Abbey National. The diamond stash, Porter thought. That's what Soames has been hiding there. He stared into the middle distance and thought. Soames has been nicking diamonds and hiding them at the mine. That's why the Russians were after him, to find out where he had buried the treasure and rob him. But something was wrong, Porter thought. I'm missing something here, but I can't figure out what it is. He nodded at Tully. How far is it to Kono from here?
250 miles or so. 6 hours, depending on how many rebel checkpoints you've got to pass through. It's mostly dirt roads, cutting through the jungle.
Porter consulted his G-Shock. 14-16 hours. According to the Nigerian soldier, the Russians had lifted Soames at approximately 13:45 hours, which meant the Russians had a 30-minute head start. He shook his head bitterly.
Oh, it's too late. We'll never catch them in time.
Not necessarily, said Tully.
How do you mean?
I've been here for 6 months, fella. I've done that trip more times than a hooker to the Clap Clinic. There's a few shortcuts the Russians won't have a clue about. If we leave now, we can still catch up with them. We can intercept the fuckers before they hit Kono.
Porter needed about a second to decide. It wasn't a brilliant plan, but it was the only one they had.
We've got to get Soames back. This is our only shot. All right, let's move. We'll take the Range Rover. Bob, you're coming with us. We'll need you to point out the shortcuts.
What about ammo? Tully said. We've got sod all left.
We've still got the 2 Makarovs.
Tully shook his head.
We're going to need more than that. Way fucking more. The jungle's crawling with child soldiers fighting for the West Side boys. And they've got some serious firepower. A few pistols won't do us much good if we run into trouble.
Then we'll nick whatever we can from the dead rebels outside. What are we going to do with this cunt?
Bald said. He pointed to the Russian with his guts hanging out. The guy's lips were dry and cracked, his breathing reduced to a light whimper. He had maybe an hour to live, maybe less. Porter didn't know for sure. He wasn't a doctor. The Russian looked up at him with heavily lidded eyes.
Please, he begged, don't leave me here.
Porter spotted the green satchel bag filled with medical supplies lying nearby. He gave his back to the Russian, reached down for the satchel, and unzipped it. Inside was a pair of first aid scissors, some sterile bandages and gauze swabs, a pack of plasters, and a roll of zinc oxide tape, plus several foil packets of pills with labels on the front. Aspirin, codeine, antihistamines, an impressive variety of sedatives. There were 10 pills to each pack. Porter grabbed one of the foil packets and shuffled back over to the Russian, crouched down next to the guy, and popped all 10 pills out of the packet. The noise of the Black Hawks had faded. They were circling a cluster of nearby buildings, scouring for targets.
Take these, Porter said, offering the Russian the pills. They'll help with the pain.
The Russian tilted his head forward and opened his mouth. Porter shoved the pills into his gob. Then he took one of the water bottles and pressed it to the guy's lips. He swallowed the pills greedily and croaked a word of thanks. Porter said,
We're going to send for help.
No,
the Russian gasped.
Don't go, please.
We can't move you. You're going to have to stay put until we can get you lifted to a hospital.
The guy swallowed painfully.
But the sun, I'll die.
Porter pointed towards a corrugated steel sheet that had blown off the roof of the water tower.
We'll put that sheet over you. Keep you shaded. In the meantime, stay quiet. You don't want to make yourself a target for any X-rays that might be hanging around the hotel.
You're coming back?
I promise.
Hope flared behind the Russian's eyes. He gave a weak nod of his head. Then Porter stood up and turned his back on the dying man. Bald pulled a face at his mucker as they moved away from the Russian.
You're going soft, helping out that bastard.
Porter laughed and shook his head.
I didn't give him painkillers. He just popped a load of sleeping pills. He'll die in his sleep before anyone finds him. The pilots won't see him under that sheet.
Bald looked impressed.
That's fucking dark, that. Coming from you, Jock, I'll take that as a compliment.
They shared a warm laugh. Then they hurried across the rooftop. Porter ditched his SLR rifle and retrieved the two remaining Makarov pistols. Porter checked both clips, 8 rounds in each, plus the 8 rounds in the PSM Bald had lifted from the German the previous day. A total of 24 rounds between them. Not enough if they ran into the West Side boys, Porter knew.
But it's all we've bloody got.
He tucked one of the Makarovs in the waistband of his combats and handed the other pistol to Tully. Along with the PSM, Bald carried the GPMG, stuffing his pockets with spare link as he went. Porter figured they could cobble together enough spare rounds from the slotted rebels to piece together a belt for the machine gun, if they were lucky. As they headed for the stairwell, he heard the dull throb of heli blades beating overhead. He stopped and looked up at the sky, just in time to see the first Sea Stallion arrive from the direction of the jetty. The two Black Hawks continued to circle the streets as the Stallion banked to the right, closing in on the helipad 100 meters west of the hotel. The chopper hovered for a few seconds above the helipad before slowly descending, the downwind whipping up fierce swirls of dust on the ground below. The Stallion touched down, the rotor blades continuing to whir as the ramp lowered and a detachment of 26 troops debussed. They were decked out in the Marine Corps uniform of desert camis, olive-green skivvies, and combat helmets. All of them wore wraparound shades, and they were all equipped with M16 assault rifles. As Porter looked on, 16 of the Marines formed a protective cordon around the Stallion, facing out across the surrounding territory to watch for any approaching threats. The maneuver was smooth, quick, and efficient, typically American. The other 10 Marines moved at a brisk pace towards the hotel.
"Looks like the evacuation's about to begin," Bald said.
Porter nodded. He felt a slight sense of relief as he watched the Marines enter the hotel.
"At least the civilians are safe," he thought. "Even if the mission is fucked, we did a good thing here today. Let's go."
He closed the door leading to the rooftop. The janitor's key was still inserted in the keyhole. He twisted the key in the lock, then smashed the butt of the Makarov against the bow of the key, bending the metal out of shape and trapping the metal stem in the keyhole. If anyone wandered up to the top of the hotel, they would find the door locked. The wounded Russian would be dead long before anyone managed to gain access to the rooftop. The three men piled down the stairs at a brisk pace. People were beginning to emerge from their rooms now as word of the imminent evacuation spread. On the third floor, Crowder and a team of half a dozen volunteers were moving from room to room, ordering the beleaguered guests down into the lobby so they could begin organizing into groups. Tannen was there too, helping to direct the crowd. She was back to her practical, business-like self. Porter was quietly impressed with the way she had recovered her composure after the hell of the past few hours. She marched over to him.
"The first chopper's just landed," she said. "We're sending everyone down to the reception. You should hurry up if you want to make the chopper."
"We're not going," Porter said.
"Why?"
Tannen glanced at Tully and Bald in turn, saw the troubled expressions on their faces, returned her gaze to Porter.
"What's going on?"
"Soames is gone. Some Russians have lifted him."
He hurriedly explained how the Russians had pulled the wool over their eyes, how they had been watching Soames, waiting for an opportune moment to snatch him and escape. He told her about the diamond mine and the stash Soames had been keeping there, sharing the spoils with the country's corrupt leaders.
"We're leaving now. We've got to catch up with them. Get Soames back before they reach the mine."
"I'll come with you."
Porter shook his head.
"It's too dangerous."
"I can take care of myself. I'm invested in this thing as much as anyone."
"Sorry, love. But you need to stay here and sort out the evacuation with the Yanks. Make sure everyone gets on those choppers. The rebels won't come back today, but they'll have another pop tomorrow if there's anyone left behind."
Tannen gave him a look. For a moment, Porter thought she was going to argue the point further.
"She looks like the kind of bird who's used to getting her own way."
But then she just nodded and said,
"Okay."
Porter turned to leave. Bald and Tully were already piling down the stairs ahead of him.
"John,"
Tannen said. He stopped, looked back at the deputy commissioner.
Thank you. You saved a lot of lives today.
She smiled awkwardly at him. Porter nodded back and absently wondered if he'd ever see her again. Then he turned and headed down the stairs after Bald and Tully.
I've still got one more life to save, he thought. The one person I'd rather leave for dead, my old CO.